So then we finally go back for a short revisit to IFRS 17. And who can I give the floor to? Is that Laura?
That's to me, yes. Thanks, Hans. Well, hi, everyone. Okay, so this is the first time that we've brought you an IFRS 17 paper in a little while. The last set of papers we would have brought to you would have been during the build-up to the package of amendments, and those were finalised almost a year ago now. And that package of amendments was given to help insurers with some of the challenges that they had identified as they worked through their implementation projects. Now, many insurers are well advanced in those projects, and from an ISB perspective, we're in what we sometimes refer to as a period of calm, so that insurers have stability as they come closer to the finish line. Nonetheless, some insurers have recently raised with us a specific concern, and that concern is about the significance of some accounting mismatches and classification inconsistencies that could arise in the comparative information that they're going to present the first time that they apply IFRS 17 and IFRS 9. Last week, the staff posted a paper which recommended the board propose a narrow scope amendment. And that amendment would essentially have provided insurers with a one-off fair value option to help reduce those mismatches, and that would be similar to the fair value option that's in IFRS 9. However, since we posted that paper, we received some more feedback from the stakeholders that had originally raised this concern, and they've said that the staff recommendation that was in that paper was too narrow and also would be operationally difficult for them to apply. Given that feedback, we are now discussing today a revised paper. It was posted yesterday, and it explores an approach that is similar to that previous one, but that could potentially be applied to a wider set of differences. And we're referring to that approach in this paper as a classification overlay approach. Similar to the fair value option that was explored in the previous paper, this approach would be a targeted and narrow scope amendment to IFRS 17. We're not asking the board to make any decisions during this meeting. Instead, we're asking for your views, comments, or questions about the staff view and also the potential next steps that are described in the paper. And then after today's meeting, our intention would be to return to a future board meeting with a staff recommendation. So with that, I will hand over to the board to discuss this topic.
Sue.
Thank you. How nice to have an opportunity to discuss IFRS 17 again. So firstly, thank you to the staff for this paper and also for responding quickly to the comments that we heard from the insurance industry after we posted the first paper. I know that that was a big turnaround and a quick turnaround for you, but thank you for your efforts there. I am supportive of us proposing a narrow scope amendment to try to address this issue. Why am I saying yes to that when I've said no in the past to requests that might be viewed as similar? I think two reasons. One is that the insurers are now far enough into their implementation to have given us some more colour around the magnitude of the accounting mismatch effect that could arise because of this issue, which is new information. And I think certainly for me, it's a bigger deal than I had expected it to be based on our analysis and thinking in the past. And also because I think what's proposed here has got less risk of upsetting implementation processes and also is fairly targeted. Importantly, what it doesn't do is move forward all of the assessments that you make about things like business model, fair value business model, in particular the amortized cost, significant increases in credit risk forward to the beginning of the comparative period. So it's much more in the spirit of IFRS 9, in that in fact when they get to apply IFRS 9, the analysis would be at the date of initial application and on the same parameters as everybody else. So I think that's a good thing. Also, I think it's good because it's really focusing in on this very specific issue that's been raised, which is about the accounting mismatches during the comparative period. Now, I was supportive of the original set of proposals that we had in the first paper that was posted, but for two reasons, I think it's good that we're proposing to expand them. One is that people read the words more narrowly than we had intended. So I didn't think we were limiting it to amortized cost assets, for example, but they read it that way. So I think it's important to clarify that before we go out with proposals. Also, some additional mismatches were raised that I certainly hadn't had in mind when we were looking at the first paper. And I think it's good to try to address as many mismatches as possible within the spirit of still a narrow scope project. So I'm very supportive of all of that. I think the devil's going to be in the detail, though. So sort of what we've got here is nice, but it's going to be hard to draft and it's going to be hard to scope. And I think where it's going to get a little bit tricky is what do we mean when we say that it should be consistent with the classification determined on initial application of IFRS 9. Now, when I read those words, I'd encourage us not to try and get too granular. Like, for example, I don't think we should be asking people to preempt their business model assessments and all of these sorts of things. These are assets that are never going to come into IFRS 9. They're assets that are 39 with an overlay. So I think the simpler, the better. Also, it's only for things that are never going to be in the IFRS 9 financials. They're only going to be assets within the comparative period because we're focusing on things that get derecognized before the date of initial application. So I think we should be pragmatic, given it's only things with a short-lived effect during the comparative period. I think in spirit, what I'm thinking about is something along the lines of, you know, a mismatch based similar to the fair value option. But I think we need to be clear, we don't just mean in P&L, we also mean in OCI. And I think we probably would be wise not to use the fair value option wording too much, because goodness knows what practices developed around those words that might get read into the effect, which might sort of narrow the effect of what we're proposing. But I think if the sort of anchor I'd be thinking a lot would be along the lines, I think, of an accounting mismatch type concept. So trying to improve the relationship between the way the insurance liabilities are being measured and where that's affecting P&L and OCI, and also and the relationship between that and the measurement of the assets. Thank you.
Martin?
Yeah, I also support the staff recommendation to do something in this area. And there's mainly two reasons. One is this accounting mismatch for the comparative period. And that is not news to us, but I think it was, I think also as Sue said, the magnitude, I think what I heard for companies is quite material. But secondly, and what is more important to me is that clearly companies want to prepare comparative information also under IFRS 9 because they have to do it under 17. That is also not new to us. But the problem is, if we have this in IFRS 9 transition that you cannot do then for derecognized assets in a comparative period, what does it mean for companies? They can really not in parallel prepare comparative information under IFRS 9 because they don't know until the year end of this comparative period what are the assets which are derecognized. And therefore, I think it is for operational and practical purposes, I think much, much more easier for companies than they can do it in parallel to prepare this comparative information also before they do then in 2013, then the initial application of 17 and 9. And that really convinced me that it isn't helpful. It will not damage anything, but it's helpful for insurance companies in preparing then comparative information and the transition to 17. So I totally, I think, with the staff and support this recommendation. Thanks.
Jin Chao.
I think Nick would like to comment. Yeah, first.
Okay, Nick.
Okay, thanks, Jinchao. So the consistent message I've been giving to stakeholders probably over the last 18 months is the importance of having a stable platform for IFRS 17. And I think in our communication around a potential narrow scope amendment here, we have to make it clear that this is a very specific issue that we are considering with the intention of helping provide better information as the standard becomes effective. So this is actually rather than disruptive. It's intending to smooth the path. My understanding is our requirements as they stand would impact the balance sheet at the start of the comparative period, but also the P&L as the company reports its first set of quarterly or semi-annual results. And I think one of the lessons that we've learned from other recently effective standards, new standards, is actually that first set of results is really critical for the market. And having comfort and understanding that first set of results is very important. So whilst the paper says that a potential narrow scope agenda standard setting here could reduce comparability between insurers, it also has the potential to increase comparability in terms of the time series data for individual insurers. So in principle, I would certainly support exploring this further. Thank you.
Thank you. I also support staff's proposal. I think for those insurance companies, I really can understand the challenges and the concerns ahead for them because they need to implement IFRS 9 and IFRS 17 together. So there is a lot of challenges ahead. So do something which would be helpful for them to ease implementing, you know, ease implementing both standards would be really helpful for them. So I agree with the staff's proposal to do something to help them. And also, I think, as Nick said, I also think that first set of comparable financial statements prepared by those companies would be really, really critical to stakeholders. But I have a couple of questions. Not only the principle proposed in paragraph 43, I think some further clarification may be still needed. I think Sue has mentioned some point. For example, from my point of view, currently the scope, proposed narrow scope amendment will apply to those financial assets that is related to insurance contract liabilities. So I wonder, because with our debate, our proposal starts from those financial assets derecognized during comparative, period. So I think it should be made clear whether we still focus on those financial assets derecognized before the, during the before the actually initial application date, or we are going to expanding, other financial assets. And secondly, I think the proposals also start from those financial head assets could cause accounting mismatch. So I think consistent with classification determined on the initial recognition, initial application of IFRS 9, but it seems to me it's not so clear enough whether it's exactly the same as we are going to say, greater consistency with classification, or directly say to try to reduce or, accounting mismatch. And also clarified accounting mismatch not only related to P&L, but also OCI would be helpful. And thirdly is about comparative, period. I think I understand the amendment we're going to make is to amendment to IFRS 17. So under this background, actually comparative period will only be limited to 1 year. So I think this kind of clarification also would be helpful because in my understanding, some companies may prepare more than 1 year's comparative, period the financial data. So this kind of clarification may be needed under the IFRS 17 whole package. So yeah, but generally I agree with staff's proposal, and hopefully we can do it as quick as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen Chao. Bruce.
Thanks very much, Hans. Just to say, I'm obviously supportive in terms of what the staff are trying to do. I mean, I appreciate that. I think Nick's warning around the communication is very important, given we have been telling people this is a stable platform, and I don't want to get to a stage where they suddenly think we're prepared to reopen on anything else. So I think we've got to be very, very clear that this is a one-time narrow thing. We're not going to continue to reopen it. I guess the only concern I've had, which I've expressed to the staff for me, is just around the comparatives. My worry comes in more and more in terms of the more comparatives a company gives. So if somebody decides to give 3 years of balance sheet, we could potentially end up in a situation where you get very different accounting over the 3 years for the same assets. So I know we can look at that in terms of the disclosures and that. So I would say broadly I'm very supportive of this, but I would like to see what the ultimate transition and disclosures are going to look like, especially when we start getting more years being given. I just get a concern that we could have literally the same asset accounted for three different ways. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Mary?
Thoughts, especially picking up on multiple comparative periods, which both Jen Zhao and then Nick raised. IFRS 17 looked at this issue of what are you permitted and what are you required to do in, you know, if you go back more than 1 year in terms of the comparatives, and I think gives some flexibility. So I think I would just say to the staff, to look at how the IFRS 17 requirements work and think about whether we might, and I hate that this brings additional complexity, but whether we might need to link the availability of this overlay in additional comparative periods to the choice that entities make under IFRS 17 for how they deal with that additional comparative period. That's one thing. And I'm so happy to have the company of two other board members in terms of fixation on multiple comparative periods, because sometimes I feel like just the lone geek raising that. A second thing, and this is really a messaging point. You talked about it just generically as an overlay, and it struck me, Laura, as you were teeing it up, that this really is an overlay on to IS 39, because I think it's important that we message in communication about this, that we're not modifying IFRS 9. IFRS 9 says you don't apply IFRS 9 to things that have been derecognized before the beginning of the date of adoption. So assuming 1/1/23, that what we're doing is an overlay that would modify what IS 39, which is the standard those things currently are accounted for under, would require. If the following three criteria are met, you are electing to restate your comparatives under IFRS 9 as part of your adoption of it. The assets are related to insurance contracts and the asset has been derecognized. And then the staff is proposing an asset by asset election for this. So supportive of you developing proposals along those lines, but I wanted to raise the messaging point as well as the comparatives point. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I'm supportive of this effort for all the reasons that have already been explained, and I explained in the paper. I also emphasize the narrow conditions in which this is going to be applied, and I think they're well described in the paper, and that's part of me approving the direction for this. I have 2 points to make. I think it should be abundantly clear what related assets mean, And I understand that there are references in IFRS 17 that can be pointed out too, which would be helpful. And I think to ensure that everybody understands well the extent of this overlay approach, of course, in not forgetting about the context, in the narrow context, the one-off context in which it's going to take place, I think it would be worthwhile identifying what makes this overlay approach different from a retrospective application of IFRS 9, so measurement recognition and measurement requirements, and why it is better to go for this overlay approach instrument by instrument than it would be from applying the IFRS 9 recognition and measurement requirements in the comparative, retrospectively, in the comparatives. I think helping people understand the differences and would be a matter of clarity and justifying why this is better could also be helpful, even though not necessary.
Martin, I'm having internet problems, so cannot hear everything very well.
Okay, I have a short question. When Mary said, okay, it is an overlay approach to IAS 39, I agree to that, but we should be clear that, okay, if we perform this overlay or the company is performing that, they will end up in the classification and measurement under IFRS 9. Because otherwise it will operationally not work. Is that my right understanding, Laura? I think that is our understanding. We will end up, overlay will have then the result that if it was classified under the, when it comes out classification method under IFRS 9.
Except for the impairment model. So we're not making them early apply expected credit losses, but the...
No. That is who I said classification and measurement.
Well, I think that is part of classification and measurement.
Okay, you're right. Only think it's okay. Three part classification and accounting.
Yeah, that's right. I think the only point is we're not asking that, to Mary's point, which I think is the right one. I think the benefit of this over the requests that some have made to be able to apply IFRS 9 essentially for comparative purposes from the beginning of the comparative period, is I don't actually have to formally go through all the business model assessments, the SPPPI, all that sort of stuff so formally. But yes, the outcomes are consistent with 9, so that if they were thinking ahead to 9, the objective is to sort of get them in the same place, which I think is what you're getting at. I just wanted to add one quick point. So Mary said something in her summary of the three conditions, which I don't think she would disagree with what I'm about to say, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. So when we started looking at this, we were very much focused on companies that were planning to restate their IFRS 9 comparatives who had accounting mismatches because of that derecognition restriction. Subsequently, we heard some who aren't planning to restate the IFRS 9 comparatives are still worried about accounting mismatches between their 39 accounting and IFRS 17. And so we are planning that this overlay would be available for things to which 39 is applied, which could either be because it's derecognized prior to the date of initial application for those who are restating 9, or it could be those who are actually staying on 39 for the comparatives, but they'd still be able to use the overlay, just to be clear. Is that right, Laura? You're nodding, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So it wouldn't just be for those that are restating 9.
Okay. I think that brings us to the very end of our deliberations for this month. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
And until
bye.
The next time.
Bye.
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 Chisel.
Thank you. Bye.